Hi. Thank you. It's good to be back. It was really something. This morning, I was on my bike coming down Bering, that I got to enter off of San Felipe, finally. Coming down, and I saw the sign outside that said, "Welcome back, Jeff," and it was a good way to come back. And so then I come inside, and there's a sign on my door that, again, "Welcome home, Jeff. We left the light on for you." So that was good. A lot of times whenever we come back from sabbatical, the people that we love and work with do things to our offices. I was expecting something in my office, and so I opened it up and immediately kind of scanned it real quickly, thinking what all is going to be, and there were no balloons. It wasn't covered in Post-it notes, nothing. But by my desk, if you've been in my office, right by my little desk that I have shoved in the corner, I have a window, and I have a ledge, that window. And sitting on the ledge of the window was this. But it's not what you're seeing right now. It was all lit up with glitter, and it has a snow globe effect, and it's the Last Supper cast in gold as a kitschy snow globe that an unnamed Snyder purchased at a Cracker Barrel at a roadside. And my initial phrase that came out of my mouth whenever I opened the door and saw it was, "What in tarnation?" Because I'd never seen anything like this. And then it suddenly, within about 30 seconds, became one of those things that once you see it, you realize, I can't live without this. This is one of the most wonderfully ridiculous things I've ever seen in my life. So, with apologies to Leonardo da Vinci, who has nothing on this, this was what I walked into. I don't know where to put this now. I can't put it on the table. I'm going to hide it behind the plant. I want to put it on the table, but I can't. So then I go to my desk, and there's a stack of encouragement cards. And I've told y'all this before, but just in case, I still have every encouragement card that I've ever received over 13 years. I keep all of them. And on bad days, on the days that just really feel bad, I just grab a random stack of them, and I'll read them. But the ones today, I really appreciated all of them, but the one from Zoe Fuller, she's such one of a kind. So she writes to me, "Have fun on you sabbatical," or "Find peace," in parentheses, and a word I can't identify. I'll ask her when she gets back. And then in little stars, two starred side notes, "Please don't die." I didn't. "Please come back." I did. And then she says, "I hope your trip is better than you could ever imagine, but not too good, because we need you back." Zoe Fuller. So that one was a good way to come back. And then I sat down at my desk. Again, it was still pretty early in the morning. I sat down at my desk, and I opened the sermon that I wrote back in July, because I knew that
You know, I wasn't going to have a lot of work time before coming back today and preaching, so I wrote the sermon a couple of months ago. And so I opened it up just to go over it a few times. I knew what it was going to be, but still, you want to freshen it up. And I sat down and I started reading it. And about every paragraph or line of notes, every paragraph I ended reading, and like the what intonation reaction, my reaction as I read every paragraph and got to the end of every paragraph was, And I read another paragraph, And another one, no. And I thought, if I'm having that reaction sitting in my office reading my sermon, you probably will too. But I don't know that for sure. But I knew that I had that. And I'm not going to come, deliver something unless I really believe in it and firmly am like, yes, this is what needs to be said today. And I realized now that what I wrote a couple of months ago is valuable. It wasn't anything crazy. Reese used to ask me when she was 2-3 years old why I went to church early. I think I've told y'all this one. Why do you go to church early? And I said, well, baby, I want to get in my zone. And Reese is my daughter. Sorry, I get so used to everybody knows everybody. Reese is my grown daughter now, but she was 2 a long time ago. And she used to ask me, why do you go to church so early? And I said, well, baby, I want to get in my zone. I want to, think about the things that we're going to ponder this morning, the stories we're going to tell. And she said, yeah, you don't want to get up in front of everybody and say, I love the devil. And I'd be like, well, sweetie, that's true. So that's why I go to church early. So there's that. But, so I'm here early, and again, I'm thinking about, what needs to be said today. The part of what I had originally planned for today that still needs to be said is the story. It's the text. The text that we were going to read, that's on the lectionary text, that churches around the world are reading today, that still needs to be heard. But it needs to be heard for those of us who are living in August of 2023, not those of us who are living in July of 2023. Because every day that we wake up, the world changes on us. I mean, y'all seen this. The world's changing at this alarming rate, so much so that it's hard not to get up and be a little bit afraid. What comes next? What in the world is going on? So we're all walking into our offices every morning saying, what in tarnation? And it's because we face a world that says, here's another reason to be afraid. And so the text for today that has been the text for today, kind of set in stone for months now anyway, still needs to be heard, and so here it is. This is from Matthew 14. Immediately, he made the disciples get into the boat, Jesus, and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, Lord, if it's you, command me to come to you on the water. He said, come. So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, you of little faith, why did you doubt? When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshiped him, saying, truly you are the Son of God. And all of that happened immediately. Did you hear that word? Over and over again in the text, immediately. That's a leftover from Mark. Because Matthew used a lot of Mark. And Mark was real big into the ands and the immediatelys. Mark was the one who started almost every sentence of his gospel with the word and. English teacher's total nightmare. But in Greek, it was probably a way of driving the story forward. It just kept it moving. It kept it moving. And this happened. And this happened. And this happened. And maybe that's the way Mark wrote it. Maybe not. Maybe he was just a terrible grammarian. Who knows? But there was this driving force that just kept the story going, kept the story going. But especially in this story, this and immediately, it just keeps happening so fast in the story. Peter starts to sink. What does Jesus do? Immediately reaches out and grabs him. But it's what Jesus says. And it's these three little sentences, these three little things that Jesus says, that when I was sitting in my office not that long ago writing a shaving cream sermon, you know what a shaving cream sermon is? Shaving cream sermon is when you're shaving on Sunday morning writing your sermon. I don't write those. Those are a big no-no in my world. But, you know, every once in a while you got to write a shaving cream sermon. So as I'm sitting there writing this shaving cream sermon, the thing that occurred to me about these three sentences, the three things that Jesus said to them farther back than July of 2023, still have something to say to us today. And I know there's lots of things on our minds these days, and I know there's lots of things that we're worried about, lots of things that people are afraid about, but you know, these three things that Jesus said, these need to be central in our conversation. These need to be the center of what we are talking about in our lives as people in this church. And Jesus says, first, take heart. And then he says, it is I. And then he says, don't be afraid. Take heart. It is I. Don't be afraid. Some of you are going to walk into offices tomorrow morning. And when you walk into your office, no telling what you're going to see. But whatever it is that you see, at least hear echoes of Jesus there on the water, not that long ago in the grand scheme of things. And it's Jesus still saying, take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. And there's going to be things that we encounter in the future. Your personal life, your family, our church, our city, state, country, world, whatever it may be. And the echoes of what Jesus said then still need to be heard today. You're going to go out on the water and it's going to be scary. And there's going to be storms that come in and sweep the boat all over the place and it's going to be scary. And Jesus is still going to be saying, take heart, it is I, don't be afraid. Now that's the text for today. But as I was finishing shaving, reading the passage, it occurred to me that there is an epilogue in Matthew 14 that is left off of the readings that many churches around the world are reading today. And it may be because this little epilogue sometimes feels like an afterthought. I want to suggest to you today that the epilogue to this text, the little tack-on that ends chapter 14, may be the most important thing that happens in Matthew 14, and that it even informs the way that we can hear Jesus saying, "Take heart, it is I, don't be afraid." Because did you notice, whenever Jesus says that, the wind is still going. The storm is still happening. And why would they trust Jesus? What do they have to trust other than what they've seen up to this point? Which is a lot, to be fair. But there's still that element of doubt that says, are you really going to make good on your promises, Jesus? Are you really going to do what you say that you're going to do, God? And I know a lot of us, different points in our lives, reach those kinds of points. God, I trust you. I've seen what you've done up to this point. But man, things are awfully crazy right now. When Jesus says, take heart, it is I, don't be afraid, the wind is still blowing and the boat is still all over the place. Then, we know what happens. Peter does that. He doubts. Everything, you know, calms down. And then there's this little epilogue. When they had crossed over, they came to land at Gennesaret. After the people of that place recognized Jesus, they sent word throughout the region and brought all who were sick to him and begged him that they might touch even the fringe of his cloak. And all who touched it were healed. I think it's time for us to go looking for the fringe of Jesus' cloak. To put that front and center on a lot of our lives. To just reach out and touch the cloak of Jesus. I don't know what all it's going to look like and what it's going to mean, but it seems like something that the Bible is suggesting to us as we read this morning. Reach out and touch it. We are in a world right now that desperately needs to be healed. And the source of that healing may be as simple as reaching out, touching Jesus' cloak, because the Jesus that wears that cloak is the one who still says today, take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. Amen.